It's that time. Lock and load. The Michael Berry Show is on the air.
Eviction moratorium just lapsed and expired a few days ago. Cori Bush is a racist black woman congressman who supposedly stayed outside overnight at the Capitol. We don't know. Maybe she went and slept in a hotel and came back in the morning. She did look pretty raggedy. So maybe she slept outside, but she looks pretty ragged all the time. Anyway, this black woman racist tweeted that every member of Congress should, that every activist should come and join her to hashtag Occupy Congress. And then she showed a group of her friends who she said were joining her to Occupy Congress. Which is interesting because they've been holding sham commission hearings on January 6th protest, which was designed to occupy Congress. Well, you know the drill. The left can get away with whatever they want. They burned down the country last year during the BLM riots and the Antifa riots. They beat police officers, even killed police officers. They killed people in the streets. They destroyed livelihoods. They did untold property and physical human damage. No hearings. No condemnation. In fact, we were told by one reporter live on camera for CNN as a building burned behind him that it was mostly peaceful. They defunded the police as a result. And now the crime rate across the country has skyrocketed. But the eviction moratorium supposedly came from the Centers for Disease Control, which is not a lawmaking body. But they said if people don't have to pay their rent, then they won't spread COVID. But if they don't pay their rent and their landlords kick them out for not performing on the contract, then COVID. Wait, COVID? Yeah, COVID. What does that have to do with anything? So you don't have to pay your rent because of COVID? So what happened was, if people didn't have to pay their rent, they didn't. What if you're the landlord? Well, we'll give you some government money. What about when the government money runs out? Well, you're rich, you're a landlord. They're poor, they're a tenant. Let them stay, says Sheila Jackson Lee and Nancy Pelosi. This is just like rent control, which has been tried since the days of ancient Greece. There have been a number of studies on rent control in New York because it's the largest American market that uses rent control. One of the things they found is a lack of sufficient housing stock inside the city, because nobody wants to build housing stock because you're limited by rent control. If people can't pay or you can't raise your rent as the market increases, there's no profit motive. Without the profit motive, people don't risk their capital to build a building. They don't make improvements to their building. One of the things they found is that the quality of housing stock in New York City is very low in rent control zones. Why would I make an improvement to a rent controlled apartment when I can't make back the money I put into it? So buildings go decrepit. Derelict buildings are everywhere. And people stay in them because they're cheap. Landlords don't fix them because there's no incentive. Until eventually the buildings become so derelict that at some point they have to be condemned. Even though they're in great locations. Because of rent controls. The left doesn't understand economics or care because they're just appealing to people who take sad days. They're just appealing to people that are among the 2.2 million who received unemployment checks in the last few weeks. This all works together. It dovetails nicely. How many business owners have we had on the show talking about the inability to get people to come to work because they're getting unemployment? They can't get people off the couch to come to work because those people are taking a permanent sad day. They just really don't feel like going to work today. And why should they? The Biden government, the new socialism, is you give them enough to sustain them. Now, they'll never have enough that they can save anything up, that they can begin to build and invest, but they're not the types who want that. These are the sad day takers. These are the excuse makers. These are people with no work ethic. And as long as they can draw a paycheck to sit at home and get free food, free education, free Obamacare, why would they get up and work? They got their cable TV. They got their internet connection. They can sit and troll the working people all day long. And they can take a permanent sad day. And then there's you, who gets up when your back hurts, gets up when you're hungover, gets up when you have a headache, gets up when you're still taking your cancer treatment and still goes to work. And you work so that you can be taxed to pay for the people who vote for the Democrats. Well, then, when they say to you, well, there's a pandemic, which is the excuse for everything. Landlords, you can't charge rent. How long do you think the eviction moratorium stays in effect? It just lapsed. How long do you think the Democrats would have kept that in effect if they could? And how long until the system shuts down? What about the people who were just in the process of building an apartment complex? If the eviction moratorium is going to be in effect for another year, would you finish that apartment complex? Or would you convert it over? What if you were building a duplex that you were going to rent? Would you now sell that? Well, the people who are under the eviction moratorium presumably can't buy a house, right? So now, instead of more rental property coming online, there will be less. If a tenant does actually move, for whatever reason, they leave town, you can't evict them, so they'll just say they still live there, and there's a lot of that. We've heard story after story of landlords saying, the tenant's long gone, but they claim they still live there, I can't evict them. These are the policies of the left. Reward the lazy, punish the hardworking.
The Michael Berry Show.
Michael Berry.
for Disease Control just updated the 2020-2021 U.S. COVID deaths by age. I tried to post this to Facebook, but because it was a picture of a picture, it wasn't very good quality. The graph is staggering if you see it. A picture's worth a thousand words. This graph is so incredibly telling. Let me start by saying it's deaths by age. Now, it doesn't factor in another thing, and that is comorbidities. Yes, there are some people who were 50 years old who did not have an obvious comorbidity who died because of COVID. But statistically speaking, it is a tiny number of people. It is not anywhere near, not in the same state as heart attacks, cancer, accidents. But this chart shows something. It shows deaths, and it does them in 10,000 increments. The thousands are on the x-axis. The age is on the y-axis. If you go up to the very top and you see 85 years and older, beside that, the number goes all the way out to almost 180,000. 85 years and older, 180,000. That, mind you, the average life expectancy, it's higher, it's a year and a half more for women than men for a number of reasons. Dangerous jobs, risky behaviors, stress, all sorts of things. But let's average the two, and let's say it's 78. Depends on the year. It's now, it went down a full year last year, but it's 77.8 when you average men and women. That's average life expectancy. If you're 85 years or older, you've already exceeded the average life expectancy, and the likelihood each year that you will die goes through the roof. We know this. We've always known this. You're more susceptible to upper respiratory infections. There are a lot of people 85 and up who die every year, unfortunately, from things like a common cold that turns into pneumonia. Bacterial or viral infections, two different types of attacks on the upper respiratory system, are more common in elderly people. It's even worse if they are a longtime smoker. It's even worse if they've had a chronic bronchitis, a chronic upper respiratory condition. We know these things. We've always known these things. The flu attacks the elderly and those with respiratory comorbidities in far higher numbers. We lose a lot of people to the flu every single year, and we don't close anything down. We don't wear masks. We don't shut down funerals. We don't shut down graduations and wedding ceremonies. We don't send kids to their room and depression. We don't force people into depression and overdoses and drug dependencies and domestic violence. We don't ruin industries for small business and reward Amazon and Walmart and drive our small entrepreneurs into bankruptcy. We've never done that before, but we did this time because it was an election year, because we had to kill Trump. We had to get Trump out of the White House. We had to have an ability to do balloting by mail. We had to have an ability to defund the police. We had to have an ability to destabilize America. It worked. I mean, give them credit for a well-executed plan. It worked. They won. President Putin is in there. And by the way, we'll get back to these numbers because they're worth looking at. The idea was always that President Putin would be in there and he would clear the way, would have our first black woman. Well, the Telegraph World News reports, Kamala Harris has become the most unpopular U.S. vice president 6 months into an administration since at least the 1970s, according to polls. Alarmed Democrat strategists are grappling with the vice president's floundering poll numbers, which show she is now underwater, meaning more Americans disapprove than approve of her job deployment, of her job performance. The White House intends to deploy her only in certain areas to campaign ahead of next year's midterm congressional elections and will attempt to raise her profile by sending her on foreign trips in the coming months. Kamala Harris dropped out of the Democrat primary race before the first primary because she had no support, because she cackles like Hillary Clinton, because she makes Hillary Clinton seem warm, because she is a calculating, cold, because she is extremely unlikable and mean, and everybody knows it. Even with the media telling us how wonderful she is, even with the media promoting her day in and day out, she's still underwater. People still don't like her. Imagine if the media did to her what they did to Donald Trump. Donald Trump's popularity was despite news stories day in and day out. Back to the numbers. About 80% of the numbers. I got to look at this chart. I got to plot this chart properly. But it's probably, well, it's 90% of the numbers are people 75 and up. And that doesn't include how many people weren't just 75. They also had comorbidities. They had an unhealed wound. They were bedridden. They had poor respiratory health. They were morbidly obese. They were severely diabetic. You know, for all the risks of an unproven vaccine, I was very eager for my dad to take the vaccine because he's over 80 years old. There's a danger zone. He's severely diabetic. There's a danger zone. That's the person who can risk taking the vaccine. That's the person who is most at risk of catching and dying, catching the virus and dying from it, not children. If you actually look at these numbers, I'm going to get a better one. I'm going to post it to Facebook and see it for yourself. You're going to lose your mind. Caller during the break tell us that I think it was her father. It doesn't matter, but I like to get these things right. Let me see if I wrote it down. Her mom broke her hip, but she couldn't get in to be seen at the hospital because of staff shortages. There was an uptick in heart attack deaths last year that is now being attributed to the fact that people, when they were experiencing heart pains, who would have previously rushed to the hospital, were afraid to go to the hospital because of COVID fears. And so they sat at home in their recliner and died of a heart attack that, had they made it to the hospital, would have been treatable, survivable. In fact, why don't we throw open the phone line? We might just throw a line in the water and catch a person or two who lost a loved one because the hospital wouldn't see them, or who lost a diagnosis and critical time because the doctor's office wouldn't see anyone due to COVID. 713-212-5874. 713-212-5874. I read a lot of reviews of medical journals, and mostly they're not good for the radio because they're written in a very technical writing form and style, and it's not exactly the flourishes that make for good radio reading. They tend to be a little heavy on acronyms. They tend to look like German. It's all nouns. But one of the things that I have noticed as these reviews are coming in now is this propensity for people to be suffering when it wasn't necessary and would not have happened in the past because of a lack of medical care. A number of doctor's offices closed down or scaled back. A number of hospitals would not see patients who needed a diagnosis. Well, let's go back to what happened at the VA before Trump got involved. During the Obama administration, Obama hates our veterans. He's made that very clear. During the Obama administration, there were veterans who were going to the VA, waiting to be seen and not being seen. You'll remember the VA director, it turned out, in several of the places, one was in Florida, one I think was in Texas, was literally taking the applications to be seen by veterans, many of whom were combat veterans who'd served this country in war, was taking the applications, putting them in a filing cabinet, stuffing them in there, and hiding them away. If they're stuffed in the filing cabinet, then we don't have to report that they came in for help and we never even saw them. There was case after case after case, anecdotal cases of individuals who came in with an open sore on their leg that turned out to be some form of cancer that was treatable. And 18 months later, still had not seen a doctor and died from it. We're going to see the lingering effects in time. Somebody is going to dig in and we're going to find the true costs of the COVID lockdown. And one of the true costs of the COVID lockdown is going to be a number of diagnoses that were delayed or denied that were of treatable, survivable conditions, but when allowed to fester because they couldn't get in to be seen because we converted everything in the country to a virus lab, we scared everybody in the country and just stay locked in your prison of a home. Don't come out. Well, I've got a serious chest pain that I fear could be a heart attack. No, no, just stay on your couch and die. Well, they did. People who had unexplained pains that didn't get into the doctors. Some of them still haven't been into a doctor. We're going to find in time that some of those individuals will have had a diagnosable, treatable condition had it not been delayed. Let's start with Sandra, then Joe, then Chris, and down the line. Sandra, yes, go ahead.
Yes, sir. This is not quite the same topic, but it's kind of a public service announcement. I've been following the medical research since last January as this thing has evolved. And we all know the comorbidities of blood pressure, diabetes, obesity. But one very strong study showed a tremendous link between your blood sugar at hospital intake and later death from COVID. Now, this is not a routinely done test, but it's not uncommon to just check your blood sugar when you get to the hospital. This is independent of whether or not you have diabetes. They found that people with a blood sugar above 140 died at roughly twice the rate of people with one below 140. And when your blood sugar got above 180, your risk of death was something like 8 times higher. Now, blood sugar is obviously linked to diabetes, but it's not a direct link. You can have blood sugar spikes and not be technically a diabetic. And there are a lot of people walking around who have some form of diabetes and they don't realize it yet. But this is something I think people should know because it's so controllable. This is something you have direct access to. If you think you've been exposed, dial your sugar back. We know that sugar has a direct impact on white blood cell count within 4 hours of consumption. So these are all very controllable factors that are just not played up in the media at all, even though they have direct measurable impacts.
Okay, Sandra, I'm having to process this, so I'm going to ask you to go real slow. So I think my dad's diabetic, so I'm very familiar with blood sugar numbers. I know what his numbers are. I can call him and get it right now. He's got a meter, so I'm familiar with this. But you're saying that of those people, what was the subgroup of people that the subset of people who had above 180? That was people who were hospitalized with COVID?
No, this study was done specifically on people who came into the hospital with COVID.
Oh, okay. All right. Stay right there. They're probably morbidly obese, too, but hold on. Stay right there.
It's the Michael Berry Show.
Let's go back to Sandra, and then since we only have one segment, I want to get everybody else in. Sandra, when you're talking about those blood sugar numbers above 180, isn't blood sugar just a proxy at that point for folks that are likely diabetic and mostly morbidly obese?
Well, in almost every case, definitely. But the link was consistent throughout, and the two measures that they used were 140 and 180. So it can reasonably be extrapolated that the higher your blood sugar, the worse your chances. And since we know, diabetes is clearly a series of diseases linked to how your body processes sugar. But everybody's blood sugar varies throughout the day. It's usually lowest, right before you wake up. Everybody knows that little kids sometimes have real blood sugar rushes. And again, what we know is that blood sugar is directly linked, or consumption of sugar is directly linked to a drop in white blood cell count, which is what fights the disease. And for this COVID specifically, the link to blood sugar is really, really high. Very direct, linked to death, from the disease. So when they talk about all the different comorbidities, that is one that they leave out. So people think, well, I don't have diabetes. I don't have a problem. Well, we know that a very, very, very small number of people without comorbidities who are below, the age of 70 are really at substantial risk.
Right. And that's what they don't want people to know.
Well, exactly. The media is full of those rare cases. A child died of COVID, a 16-year-old with no comorbidities. But did they have none? Or did they have this high blood sugar because they've been binging all week long, or they've got a little alcohol issue? And so that's not one that's being listed. And it might explain some of these supposed deaths with no other underlying conditions.
I think it will. Sandra, thanks for the call. What the public health and political community doesn't want you to know is that far more important than wearing a mask, which does not stop the spread of the virus, is losing weight and not eating sugar. If you actually look into the numbers case by case, it is people who are 85 and up, and it is people who are morbidly obese. Why? Well, because it feeds on the sugars in your body. Because if you're morbidly obese, you're more likely going to have respiratory problems naturally. Fat people have trouble breathing. These are realities. And as Sandra noted, for those people who are younger, who die, which statistically are a tiny, tiny percentage, if you're not morbidly obese and you're younger and you get it and die, you are in a statistical very low number. And if they drill down on those, I'll bet you their A1C numbers are through the roof and they were pre-diabetic. Some people are predisposed to diabetes. There's two types, even without being heavy. Their body has difficulty processing sugar. But instead, we want to act like this is a loogie, that we're all walking around spitting a loogie. And so as long as you keep the mask on, the loogie stays stuck in your mask. And then if you have a mask on, even if someone takes their mask off and they spit it at you, your mask will stop it. That's not it. It's an aerosol-based virus that's airborne for up to 60 feet. The 6 feet was never scientific. They made it up. That's how they went from 6 to 3 feet overnight. How did that happen? If 6 feet was required, how did you reduce it to 3? Because people weren't following any of it. And how is it that over 1,000 doctors said that you could have the George Floyd, St. George Floyd riots last summer? That was an overwhelming, that was a justified purpose for having rallies. So you couldn't have concerts, but you could have the George Floyd riots or the George Floyd rallies, which Sylvester Turner spoke before one of them, where they had thousands of people. You ever go back and look at that picture? The pictures are still out there. There's drone footage of thousands of people crammed into the city park as they talked about how awful the cops were, and Sylvester Turner led them in the chants of St. George Floyd. We had over 1,000 doctors, part of the medical establishment, say that that was okay for them to gather. Because somehow this virus doesn't like concerts or graduations or funerals, but really, really supports the cause of George Floyd, and therefore won't be involved in the spread of the disease, of the virus. Good grief. And you wonder why they're offering $25 gift cards to people in Houston to go and take the vaccine. Houston Health Department offering gift cards to those who get the COVID vaccine. The program is funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So part of what they're doing is $25 gift cards if you'll go get the vaccine. Are there people out there who say, you know, I'm not at a high risk of getting the vaccine, and I want to wait a minute and see what's in the vaccine? Well, we have a $25 gift card to Walmart, Target, Old Navy, Ross, Amazon, Shell, Walgreens, or Metro. Oh, well, I guess for $25 gift card, I could be talked into that. Eligible clinic locations and hours of operation. See if you notice a theme to where these clinic locations are. Acres Homes on 6719 West Montgomery. Hiram Clark on West Fuquay. La Nueva Casa de Amigos on North Main. Magnolia Multi-Service Center on Capitol Street. Northside Health Center. Sharpstown Health Services. Southwest Multi-Service Center and Sunnyside Health Center. Those are the strongest boxes for Democrat votes in the entire region. Wonder how come Kingwood didn't get one. Wonder how come Clear Lake didn't get one. Wonder how come Memorial didn't get one. Gosh, it's almost as if you're discriminating against certain people and rewarding others. You don't think old Sylvester Turner would do that, do you? Not right in the midst of rebuilding our criminal justice ecosystem.
We are rebuilding the criminal justice ecosystem.